We're going to be in Psalm 24. We're going to continue our series on his ascent to heaven and his glorious ascent. And I get to share out of a scripture that's very important to me in my life. It's probably one of my life scriptures, Psalm 24. And I have 1 Peter 5, 6 through 11. You want to read that, you can write that down, read it later. But this is Psalm 24. I got this one night as I was living on Sanibel. I was, you know, you understand, I've been part of the church here since I was 14. So I'm 58 now, so that's how long I've been a part of this church. And so here I'm 14 years old, just showing up at this church out on Sanibel Island, little Baptist church out there. And I've been able to have the fortunate ability to be a part of a church for a long time and walk in the blessings of it. And, you know, I've probably caused most of Jamie's gray hairs in his life. I think his daughter's probably got a lot of that in there, but I'm sure I have my moments as well. But this is probably a time when I was probably 19 or 20 years old. Pastor Jamie was out at in Kansas City. There was a conference there. At the time, there was a lot of prophetic words about things that were going on in the vineyard. He went out there. This was kind of his introductory maybe to maybe becoming part of the vineyard. And so I had spent some time in prayer back in the house behind on Sanibel. So the house was behind the church, and it was like maybe a couple hundred yards to walk up to the main building. And so out on Sanibel, you need to know when it's nighttime, there's no streetlights. So it's just dark, really, really, really dark. And so I was at the house, I was praying for him. He was at the service, and I was writing some things down in my journal, and I felt like I should go up to the church, and maybe I'd grab one of the guitars, and I'd sit there, and I would just sing, and I'd pray, and stuff like that. But on my way up to the church, I'm walking down this path. You gotta know, that's swampy there. I mean, it was not a, you know, who knows what's out in the woods, you know, out in that edge of, there's just a little road that went there. But I'm walking through, it's pitch black dark, and I hear what I think are these two, I don't even know how, it sounded like two sonic booms. But it was felt like the ground shook, and it was like, which made me run to the church because it was dark. And I don't know if you've ever been in a church at dark, but it's kind of scary, you know, especially when it's out on the edge of the swamp, you know. But I made my way in and I started to pray, and the Lord gave me Psalm 24, and he began to use this psalm in my life to help me understand a lot about how to walk out my life and my faith. But last week, Jamie was talking about in this glorious ascent, he was talking about this procession. I don't know if you haven't heard it, I'd go back and listen to it. I mean, it's an amazing sermon, because when we look at the Word of God, you know, if we look at the Bible, it tells us a lot about the beginning, the middle, all the way leading up to, you know, Jesus' death and his resurrection. And then we have to go all the way to the end for his second coming. But in between his resurrection and this, there's just kind of this emptiness. Doesn't really tell us a lot about what it is. But Jamie helped put a lot of good language to that last week, and that I felt so refreshing just as I even look at Psalm 24 with you all this week. It gave me a new light and a new lens to kind of look at life through, because there's so much that happens. And that glorious ascent that he talked about, let me just read to you just give you a little context. We'll be in Acts 2. And we'll be in verse 32. And it says, God raised this Jesus to life, and we are all witnesses of the fact. Exalted to the right hand of God, he has received from the Father the promise of the Holy Spirit as poured out what you now see and hear. Okay, and then David goes on, he says, for David did not ascend to heaven, as yet he said, the Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool for your feet. And so here in this, Jesus has ascended and he sat at the right hand of God. Say this with me. He sat down. All right, say it one more time. He sat down. All right, on three. One, two, three. All right, I'll give you better directions. He sat down. It's a big deal that Jesus sits down in this moment. Can you think of the moment he got up and came as a baby? That moment he left and all the things that had happened, you know, from, again, the death on the cross, all the things that he had, the healings and all the interactions he's had with us. He's interacting, and here he's, Jamie talked about last week, and he was in that 40 days of just hanging out with us. All these things have happened, but now he's ascended to the right hand of God, and he sat down. What a powerful, amazing moment. I can imagine if there was some reverberation throughout all creation, it was in the moment he sat down. Because he said on the cross, it is what? Finished. But he still had to take this time, and he ascends up to heaven, and he sits down at the right hand of God. And now what happens? And I think Psalm 24 will give us a little bit of an understanding. So I'm going to read the first part of it to you, and I'm going to venture off a little bit into a couple things here. But let's Psalm 24. It says, "The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. For he founded it on the seas and established it on the waters." So the earth is the Lord's. What belongs to the Lord? What's everything? I mean, well, you don't like name your toaster or something like that. I mean, let's think a little bit bigger. What belongs to him? The universe, okay, the world, everything in it. What's in the world? What is it? You. You're in it. He just didn't own everything in the world. Everything in it belongs to him. That includes you. He cares about it deeply. He didn't come to this earth to die on a cross because he didn't care about it. He didn't give up where he was at in his life because he didn't care about it. He cared deeply about it, so much so that he would leave his place next to the Father to come to help you have a relationship with the Father. Only by through his blood and only through his sacrifice could he appease that atonement that needed to be done on your behalf. And so when he's sitting at the right hand of God, he owns it all. Now we're caught in the middle here. Because I know at times in my life, I don't feel that way in my life. I'm just trying to pay bills. I'm just going through health issues. I'm, you know, working, trying to, you know, keep track of my kids and those kind of things. And I don't really look at this, everything that I'm doing falling under this umbrella is that, you know, the Lord owns everything in the earth and everything belongs to him. But let's press forward because this gives some good context. It says in verse 3, "Who may ascend the mountain of the Lord, who may stand in his holy place, the one who has clean hands and a pure heart, who does not trust in an idol or swear by a false god. They will receive a blessing from the Lord and vindication from God their Savior." Now I can want to bring you back at that point that I was, when God gave me this verse that night that I was walking up to the church. I had a dream later on that night, and in my dream, remember that movie that you pulled the sword out of the rock? Was it Excalibur or something like that, where they had to, but in my dream, Jesus came up to me and he said to me in that dream, he says, "Do you want it? Do you desire it? And if you want it, you're going to have to climb. If you want that." And I woke up and I wrote that down in my journal, and to this day, it's one of my favorite entries. And I began to look at this verse because he reminded me of Psalm 24. "Who can ascend to thy holy hill? He who has clean hands and a pure." Now, I don't need a raise of hands because I know none of us in this room have clean hands. You might think you have clean hands. You might think that you're doing pretty good. Now, you might be doing better than the person next to you, or you might be doing worse than the person next to you. But when it comes to in comparison to who Jesus is and how we're going to climb this holy mountain, that he's asking that we would have clean hands and a pure heart, that none of us foot the bill that would make that possible for us. And I grew up with this scripture always feeling like I was lacking something. So I would do pretty good. Maybe there's some seasons of life like you have. Maybe you have seasons of life that go better for you. Like if you can think of the moment that was your most godly moment, that everything in your life just seemed like it was working together and you had this great understanding of God. You felt his goodness and his peace and his security. You felt his grace in your life. And maybe you could look at it like a high water mark of your life. So everything now you kind of compare back to that. And you look at it and go, if I could just get back there, I would feel better in my life. So when, for me, as I climb this holy hill that he's talking about, I wanted to. I love Jesus. I want to serve him. I gave my life to him. At 14, I wanted to be a pastor. I wanted to, all those things. I had all the right things that I was saying. But as I found out, as I lived this verse out, I never got very far before I felt like I couldn't go any further. Because climbing this hill of faith is hard. It's hard work. It's not an easy climb. It's not an easy place to obtain. Now you have to understand that it breaks my heart at times in my life because I would just give up because it was too hard. Have you found that faith sometimes is hard for you? Is there one person, come on, one person that could agree with me. Yes, Charles. The rest of you are like, oh, it's piece of cake. No, it's hard. It's hard raising teenagers and loving Jesus. It's hard to pay insurance premiums and love Jesus. Right? It's hard to work through your health issues and love Jesus. It's hard to be a good spouse and love Jesus at the same time. It's hard work. There's so many other categories that we could put in there. You might climb really high in one of these categories, but in the other ones, you're not climbing at all. Some of you might be great worshipers. Man, did you feel that with the band? Did you feel some of those moments? All those songs were tied into this message. The King of Glory, didn't you hear that song? Who is this King of Glory? That ties right into this song. But you might be a great worshiper, but maybe over here in your health, it's just like, I don't even know if God's alive. I feel abandoned. I don't feel like I'm connecting with him. Maybe you're doing better in your health, but over here, you've never felt his presence in worship. You can't just climb in one good area of your life. And we all have that area. It's like going into Guitar Center and you get one of the guitars out and you play your best lick. I'm sure Cal would see that all the time as he would come in and you see the guy coming in again and go like, oh no, we're gonna have to listen to Stairway to Heaven again for 4 hours. But you've got your best lick. You've got your best thing, your best conversation, your best, you know, whatever it is in your life. But unfortunately, when we climb this hill of the Lord, he wants, because if he owns it all, he's expecting all of it to come. Right? You can't just worship him and not love your family. You can't just trust God with your family and not honor him in your finances. He wants it all. It all has to come up the hill. And which makes you think of that expression that we have, Jesus, I got a lot of baggage. And we all got a lot of baggage. How are we going to lug it up this mountain? But when I heard Jamie share this last week, it really helped me have a new eyes for this. But before I do that, we used to go up to Georgia at his cabin, and we'd do our staff retreats there. We'd have amazing times. But they had this porch that looked over Pinnacle Knob. And for years, we went there, and I stared over the deck at this. So I'm going to put that picture up. This is the view that I'm talking about. So this is that to the right is there's one, two, three, and then the fourth one in the back is called Pinnacle Knob, and so I heard that there is a scenic thing there. Didn't know, but for years I looked at that and I stared on that porch and. As a young man, I'd be like, I'm going to climb that hill. I'm going to go climb that mountain. I'm going to climb it. And then I would leave and come back the next year, and I go, man, I'm going to climb that mountain. So one year, we were up there, and we were doing a songwriting thing, and I just said, I'm going to go do it. So I grabbed two water bottles. Didn't even tell anybody. I just took off. Now, you understand, it's a winding one-mile road down just to the street. And if you ever walk through the woods, unpathed woods, it's not pleasant. There's things, there's stickers. I mean, I'll tell you that in a minute. But anyway, I took off. I had to go down to the main road. I had to go to the right because there were just people's properties there. So I had to find a place where I wasn't going to run across somebody's farm and get shot. So I went about a mile down the road. There was a church. And so I started walking up with my two water bottles and no directions, just my umption and my grit to go, I'm going to go conquer this mountain. I got up to the second knob, to the third, heading up the third one, and again, there's no path, and I take a step, and I step down, and my foot lands on a hornet's nest. These are hornets that live in the ground. They're not in the trees. There's holes in the ground, and they burrow down, and their whole nest is in there. So I've spent probably 3 hours at this point, probably getting to this point, of being at so close to the top, and I stepped, and all of a sudden, they all started coming around me. I took off, and you don't run uphill. you can run much faster downhill. And that's what I did. Except it was not a manly running. It was more like, ah! I'm not exaggerating. I was leaping in the air and the distance was, I was crashing into the ground. And so I finally get to this clearing and I don't even know where I'm at now. I can't even figure that out because it's just all trees. And this is what I come face to face with. You know what that is? It's a bear cave. So me coming down the mountain, oh no. Did I tell him I was coming? Probably. No one was, now that I know about black bears, it was probably the best thing I could have done was scream coming down that mountain because he probably got out of my way. My climb up that mountain was an epic fail. I'll show you, go to this next picture. You see that fog at the top? That's where I have to go. There's no path. I don't even know where the street is. I just can see the telephone where they kind of came through. I came back so bloody. I mean, you get caught in a thorn thicket, it would grab your shirt, and then you're like, oh no, and then it grabs your arm. Next thing you know, I was a bloody mess. Now, thank goodness there were like any cougars or something. I'd have been leaving a trail of blood all the way home. But I came back home, I came back to the cabin, and it felt like an epic fail to me. And I know at times in my life, when I look at climbing this hill of my faith, I've felt that same way. You know, planting a church, 6 months into it, closing it down. And I dreamed of being a pastor, dreamed of serving the Lord in that way. Climbing, fighting, all my effort, spending all that commodity, those different currencies I talked about, that emotional, spiritual, mental, and that kingdom currency, and seeing people saved, and for reasons in my family, we had to lay it down. Felt like the same way, honestly, that I was when I was on that mountain. Because it's hard climbing for the Lord. It's hard to have clean hands and a pure heart. You don't know how hard it is to have clean hands until you try to have clean hands. I can't get home without having dirty hands. Some of you will pull in front of me, and then I'll be like, I did it again, sorry. You're the same way, you're no different than you. It's hard. You don't know how hard it is to have clean hands and a pure heart until you try to have one. But what does he call us to? You think he's telling this to us? So that we can look at it and go, well, thanks for the glorious picture of you sitting down and that amazing ascent that you had, only because you'll never be able to reach me this high. That's how it feels in the moment sometimes, but that's not how it actually is. But it goes on in verse 7. It says, they will receive a blessing from the Lord and vindication from God, their Savior. Such is the generation of those who seek him, who seek your face, O God of Jacob. They will receive a blessing from the Lord. And I can tell you, as I look back at my whole life, and again, as I've looked at this verse a little bit different, it's helped me be more appreciative as I look back and see all the times that I was probably much higher in my climbing than I realized. I was probably doing better in my faith than I read. Because why? Because the Lord loves me and he cares about me. It's not about works. You can't have work, and it's not the works that get you there. I'm gonna go to church. I'm gonna go to group. I'm gonna tithe. I'm gonna do all those things. Those things enough are not gonna be what gets you up the mountain. It has to be what's in our heart. It has to be what's, the position of where we are and here that will help us climb. But if we're going to climb, let's have a good understanding of who he is. And you'll recognize some of this from some of our worship songs. But let's look at verse 7 together. It says, lift up your what? Your heads. You can't worship like this. You lift up your head. You want to worship God? Pick up your head. Look up. I know we have a lot in our life to look down for. We have a lot of reasons. But you have to learn to look up. You look up, your head will help your heart. If your head and your eyes begin to focus on Jesus, your heart will follow. But if you come in and you can't even worship and you can't even cry out to God, you can't even, it's probably because your head's looking down. You're looking down in your life. You don't have any reason to look up for. But this idea here is, in verse 7, lift up your head, you gates. Whose responsibility is this? Lift up your heads. Whose responsibility is it to lift up your head? Your own. It's your own responsibility. Your job. Sometimes you got to be hard on yourself. Sometimes you got to tell you, no, I'm going to worship today. I know I have a lot of reasons, but I'm going to worship God today. I know there's a mess waiting for me outside these doors. But I'm going to worship right now, and I'm going to ask God to help me. Lift up your head, O you gates. Lift up your head, you ancient doors. Remember that going up to the church, and I heard those knocking on that door, and I felt like when I was writing in my journal that was that ancient doors of my heart. Like there's a part of me that longs to be with Jesus. There's a part of me that longs to serve him. And when you can open up that part of your heart, I can just hear those doors opening for the first time in my life when I was 14 and I said yes to Jesus and I stood up just the same way that we do it here. And I said yes to Jesus. Lord, I say yes to you to be the Lord of my life. Those ancient doors come open. Lift up your heads, you gates. Be lifted up, you ancient doors. That what? The King of Glory may wait outside. The King of Glory can get sort of near you. What does it say? That he might what? I mean, you want him to come in. You want him to meet you where you're at. You can't, but I had a buddy of mine for years, as long as I've known him. Worked with him out in Bailey's on Sanibel, and I invited him to church all the time. And he always said the same thing to me. He says, Charles, I'll come to church. I just need to clean up a few things in my life. And he never came. It was always his excuse. It was always the thing. I need to take care of a few things. And when you have that mentality in your life, maybe I'll start praying next week. Just let me take care of a few things, God. Maybe I'll start doing my journal, but let me take care of a few things. Maybe I'll start being a better father or a better mom, but let me take care of a few things first. Maybe I'll work on my health, but let me take care of a few things first. You got to invite him in. It's not just to recognize that he's the King of Glory. It's not just enough to see that he sat down, but we have to understand that it's about the invitation in, that the King of Glory may come in. I want Jesus to come into my life, my heart, and every circumstance in my life. Be lifted up. Lift up your heads, you gates. Be lifted up, you ancient doors, that the King of Glory may come in. Verse 8, who is the King of Glory? The Lord strong and mighty. The Lord mighty in battle. I can't remember if it was who said it. But anyway, there was a pastor that he was like, he would just try to describe God. And he'd say, I wonder if you know him. He's the King of Kings. He's the Lord of Lords. He's the heaven. He's the beginning. He's the begin, the end. You can't go around him. You can't go under him. You can't outthink him. You can't outdisplace him. You can't outlove him. You can't, you know, there's nothing. Yeah, I wonder if you know him. And you go on and on and on and on, describing all these circumstances in your life. And in the meantime, you're feeling the lifting him up. We sang that song and it says, we lift him up. Well, I'm telling you what, he's already lifted up. He's already above the heavens and the earth. He sat down at the right hand of God. He's already there. But you can't see him if you're not looking up. You got to look up in your spirit. You got to look up in your heart. Even if everything in the natural around you is down, you got to look up. And you got to be able to let God in that time of your life. And he will point his way to you. Let me come back to my trip in Georgia. I wanted to make it right because I still had this longing to get up that mountain. So we came back the next year, and I convinced Jason, myself, and we got Jamie to go with us. Now, you remember my first attempt. That's all I had to sell him on. So you want to step on hornets, get chased by bears, climb down a bloody mess? Then you're with me. But we went, And so we're heading up the mountain. We went to the same path, went to the church, began to climb up the hill. So we're probably an hour into it. And Pastor Jamie looks at us and goes, "Guys, I can't go any further." And we're like, "What? We're going that way." And then he said, "Don't worry. I'll head back to the cabin. You guys finish on." Which we were like, "Okay." And we took off. And we didn't, later it came out, you know, as like, as he preached about for like 6 weeks in a row, that we abandoned him. And we did. Honestly, we did. We left him with no compass. We left him with no water. And we went off, and he went back down the hill. It took him like 3 hours to get back to the house. So we walk out. We make it up to this ridge. Here, let's show a picture of what we came out to. No, wrong one. Back. Go back. The one that's just open. There you go. So this is Pinnacle Knob. That's the pinnacle that looks over all the ranges. And when you think about how high God is, he sees over everything. Nothing looks over him. He looks over everything. But we made it. And then we went back around a different way to get home, and we came out into the street, and we were too tired. We were probably still bloodied up a little bit, but we had finally made it to the top. And so we had a genius idea that we'll call Jamie and have him come pick us up. Which, if I were him, I would have said, no. But he came and he got us. And then he preached about it for like 6 weeks straight, how we abandoned him. And we rightfully deserve that. But I learned a few things going the second time. And I still learned some things not to do. I didn't honor my pastor, and it would have been better for me not to experience that and leave him behind. But I still made it up. We found the path. We figured out how to get there, and we enjoyed the view. We later went back, and we redeemed ourselves like 3 years later. So I remember we had our whole staff, and we're all climbing up the hard way. That's the way we went. We went the hard way. You'll enjoy the view better if you have to work for it a little bit. If there was just an elevator to the top, you know what your experience would be? Oh, that's nice. Click. All right, I'm going home. But when you fought hard to get up the mountain, you want to do something. When you fight hard in your faith to climb, you want to do something. It means more to you when you have to fight those battles. When you're praying for your kids and you're like, God, help them move in their life, you know, and you don't have anything that really points in that direction that they're actually doing those things, but you're climbing hard. So when you do have those moments and you see that beauty of what you're looking at, it means more to you. When they show up to church and you look at them, they're raising their hand a little bit in worship, or you're looking at their mouths moving, going, they're singing. I didn't know that was possible. And you enjoy that moment more because you had to fight for it. You had to work for it in your life. But climbing that mountain, here we're all as a team, and we're working together. There's probably like 15 of us going up this side of this mountain, and we're helping each other up. We're reaching back, and those who were underneath that were low on energy, we learned that we put the slowest person in front of us so that you'll never leave them behind. And there's some natural peer pressure there. Everybody's like, hurry, move. But there's encouragement because we know what's waiting for us at the top. I knew what was at the top. I knew what I was trying to get them to. You don't think Jesus knows what he's trying to get you to climb for? You don't know that he has a plan for your life and he wants you to climb because he wants you to get you to see that in your life? I knew what was waiting for the team. I knew it was going to be an aha moment that would make everything that we just went through worth it. But we're helping each other. I remember reaching back, and we're helping the person. We're getting through the tough, really rigid, steep parts, and we're pulling and we're pushing, and finally we all get there. And then I stopped everybody because I knew where we were coming out, and I said, no. I said, I'm going to honor my pastors here. And I let Jamie and Kim be the first ones to go out on the knob. Remember, he'd had this cabin for a long time, and it was always his hope that he could go over and see this. And so I could have rushed out on my own. Everybody could have went, and they wouldn't have said anything to us. But there was an honor there inside of me, especially after abandoning him the last one. I wanted this to be special for them. I didn't want anybody else to be able to see what was waiting for them. So they came out there, and then you can show this picture. And we have them. And we were still beat up and tired, but we all made it. We made it together. We were able to help each other go further than we were capable of doing. It's not easy climbing on your own. You want to go fast? Go alone, as the proverb says. You want to go far? Go together. In my own youth and my own strength, I got up the mountain and ran back down, didn't even make it where I was going. Next time I got a little smarter. It works the same way in my faith. Some of you are independent in your faith. You think it's you and Jesus. Just me and Jesus. That's all I need is me and Jesus. And you think you can will your life to the plans of God all on your own. And it's not by works. It's not by might. It's not by power, but by my spirit, he says. You don't get to climb through what you do. It's the response of your heart. And you got to know that you're going to mess up. You're going to goof up. We didn't climb that mountain perfectly, but we got there together. And we shared that moment together. And I think when you think of being in a church and you see everything that's going on around you, we have small groups that you could become part of. I promise you, you join a small group, you'll go further in your climb in your faith. Because you'll have people who love you and care about you. It'll make you worship better in church, knowing that there's people in your life that love you and care about you. Even in this service, I'm getting a text from Kim's dad, Rick, Pastor Rick, and he's encouraging me. Hey, I listened to your first service. I want you to know I'm praying for you. Keep going. And I sent him back a text message. I said, thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. I'm looking forward to preaching in the second service. It's not how I felt right after the service ended. I was like, oh, Lord, please get Jamie and Kim back soon. No, it's, you know, you can laugh at me. I laugh at myself plenty. I've learned to, but I had encouraging me. You did great. You got that encouragement. It makes me want to climb higher. It makes me want to go further. But he is the King of glory. Who shall ascend thy holy hill? Now, here's a critical piece that you need to understand. If you're going to get that, go with me to Ephesians 2. We're going to be 6 through 9. This is the best part. This is what transformed this message for me into rather me being frustrated myself for never being able to climb high enough and far enough. This gave me the push I needed to go further in my life, in my faith. Verse 6, it says, and God raised us up with Christ and seated him with him. So it's the same thing we're talking about. In heavenly realms in Christ Jesus. So he is what? He sat. I'll give you one more chance. He sat. Thank you. All right. So he sat down in order that the coming ages might show the incomparable riches of his grace expressed in his kindness to us in Jesus. Verse 8, for it is by grace that you've been saved through faith and not from yourselves. It is the gift of God, not by works, so that no one should boast. How do you climb? You climb in faith by, what's the Gatorade here? Grace. Grace is it. And he's handing it out to you. Just like in that moment when you want to stop, what do you say? God, I need more grace so that I can climb further. You know when we ask for grace after we're back like I did and I've gone back and I feel horrible. I failed at my objective. It takes me weeks to come out of my slump and then finally go, all right, Lord, I'm ready to try again. It's in that moment you want to go back down that you got to go put your hands out and say, Lord, I need you. I need your fresh grace here. I need your wisdom. And it's because you ascended before me. Who can ascend the holy hill who has clean hands and a pure heart? Jesus did that. He marks the path by the very thing that he did. He who has clean hands, Jesus has clean hands. He who has a pure heart, Jesus has a pure heart. He was not lift his soul up to idols. Jesus didn't lift his soul up to idols. Or did he swear by what was false? No, he didn't. He did all of that climbing, not to get at the top, to say, I made it, and you're not here with me. Some of you have that perception of God that he's looking at you and he's complaining because you're not trying. That's the enemy. The enemy's trying to turn God, you turn you on God, like he's given up on you. All you got to do is stop right where you're at and say, God, I don't know how to change the circumstance I'm in, but right now I'm putting my faith back in you, and I'm going to start climbing right where I'm at, and I'm going to ask you to help me because you've marked the path for me to climb this holy mountain, and you've done it for me already. That's such a different way of looking at this, because if I look at it in my own strength, how am I going to climb? How am I going to do this, God? I can't even, like I said, I can't even get home without having dirty hands and a clean heart. How am I going to put a life together with this? But he's saying to you, I have the grace for you. All I want you to do is lift up your head. Keep looking at me. Don't take your eyes off me. Don't take your, now when things get good in our life, that's when we take our eyes off Jesus. It's been that way in my whole life. Just when I think things are good, that's when I've actually left him. Because now things are good and I don't need him as much. And we begin to wander away a little bit. In those moments, we need to relish those moments and say, God, I thank you for the goodness that's going on in my life. But Lord, I put my eyes back on you and I pray that you would lead me further and to be able to accomplish the things. The real true joy about climbing is that God never meant for you to do it alone. He did it. We did it with our team. It was way better together. And when you join in, when you see somebody, you bring them with you. You help them. You help them up. You help them. You pray over them at the cross. In just a few minutes, our prayer team is going to be over here, and they're going to be handing out what? Grace. They're not going to be go, well, you know, I hear what you're saying, but if you would just get your life together, then things wouldn't. Sometimes we want to say that. That I say that to myself a lot. But they want to hand out grace. They want to come over here and say, let me bless you. And we really mean it. We want God to bless you. If you realize the power that was at the cross for prayer, there would be a line going to it. I know this seems small, but my daughter's going away to college this week. And I don't really want to bother you with it. But would you give a blessing for that? Oh, I know, it's too busy. I don't want to bother them. There's people up there with real problems, and I don't want to enter. And you miss that opportunity to come and get the family of God around you that's up on the hill, and they're pulling you forward because we're all moving in the same direction in our faith. I challenge you, make them work for it this morning. I hope I have to bring them water because they're just like, I can't pray anymore. Can't give out any more grace. But some of us, we think, it's in that moment you go, I'll be okay, is the moment you should have realized, no, I'm not going to be okay. I thought when I left that porch that very first time that I was going to be okay. I thought I could get there on my own. But we get there together. And we invite people in. I'm going to invite the worship team to come back up. We'll close our service. I want to give you one more little analogy here. I kind of, as I was praying about this, and this part of the service, I want to compare it to a parade. And we do have parades out here. We have all kinds of parades out here. But they come by our building. And when you go to a parade, what do you do? What do you go to do? Watch, right? You ever want to participate in a parade? There's some parades I'd participate in that, but I wouldn't participate in that one. I remember going to Disney, and it's the rush. The parade's going to be, I was a little kid, the parade's coming by in an hour, and people are like, get your, you know, that's right, got people there, you know, and they're fighting over spots, and, you know, you want to. But a parade you think is meant to watch, but a procession, this procession that Pastor Jamie talked about last week, it's not to watch, it's to participate. And again, when I was 14 years old and I said yes to Jesus in my life and I asked him to be the Lord of my life and I stood up, it was in that moment I stepped off the curb and into that procession. We're not asking you to be watchers. We're asking you to jump in. We're asking you to join us. Think of the worship in this room. That pleasing aroma to God, even in light of all of our mess, but all of us in here lifting our heads, saying we need you, Jesus, help me, more grace. What would that worship be like to him? Let's stand. Maybe you're in the room and you've never made a decision to follow Jesus. And you're at the curb right now. And you can feel the presence of God going by you. There's something about this service that you're saying, this was a divine moment in my life. And you probably might be wondering if I've been following you around all week, just fashioning this just for you. But God had you in mind. He's been watching you all week. He's been thinking of you. And he wants to finish what he started in your life. But you can't finish something you never started. And in our weakness, even in our frail yes, it says, I want to follow you. It's the way we step off the curb and into this glorious procession in his ascension. That one day we will stand before him. One day we will be with him. But in the meantime, we're going to work it out together. So how you do that is just pray this prayer with me. Say, Lord, I invite you into my life. I invite you that I could follow you, that I could serve you. Give me clean hands and a pure heart, Lord. Help me see you. Help me know you. Forgive me of my sins. Forgive me of that thing, Lord, that just haunts me, that just shames me. Lord, those hornets that sting me and drive me back down the mountain. Lord, I pray for your grace. Give me a grace, Lord, that you said was abundant, and give it to me. So, Lord, I pray right now that you would just come and move on that individual, these people that are praying this.